Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm Shisada Kona Kamada, and I am joined tonight again by PLAN, our Vice President for the Shambhala Center. PLAN, say hi to everybody so they know you're there.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, are we just now coming in? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear us. Could you hear me before? Okay.
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, folks, just bear with me for a second because it's a little different on our end this week. Last week, I could hear myself speaking in my ears, and this week, I can't. So I just want to make sure everything is okay. I asked PLAN if she would kind of do the interviewing role again tonight because I know I left off and said that I was going to cover some additional information tonight before we got into actually the information that would start coming forward in satsang sessions. So I will hand it over to her and ask her to get started with us. Maybe we can do our clearing first and then jump right in. Okay, wonderful. So if I could ask everybody just to kind of gather yourself together, take a deep breath, get yourself nice and centered. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I now call forward a shaft of pure Christ light to surround each person who is listening to this program tonight. And those who will listen in the future. I will ask that these shafts of Christed light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth that each of us can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you listening to this program. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Okay, very good. I will tell everybody quickly that on the BBS page for the Shambhala Center, if you are resonating with the protection that we do, we do have a picture there that actually shows the I Am down through the physical form, and it has the protection right there too. So if you want to go ahead and use that in your own life, we have it placed there for you. Okay, PLAN, I'm going to hand it over to you and ask away.
Okay, well, last week we left off and you said that you would go into more of what happened with your lineage, that story. I think that'd be very interesting for people.
Okay, so how I came into my understanding of it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so it's kind of funny. When everyone, it's kind of like, I was actually speaking about this to Pielian earlier tonight. It's kind of like the thing in the New Age world, you know, it's like everyone wants their spiritual name. What's my spiritual name? And I remember back when I started getting involved kind of in this walk in 2007, feeling very jealous of the people who knew their spiritual names. And I wanted mine too. And of course, whenever we desire something, it tends to be elusive. So that it was no surprise that nothing kind of popped up for me. I did very, very deep dissolution work for a solid year. And at the end of that time, my guide, Atona Reyes, was coming back to Charlotte. And I said to her at that time, I think it's time. I think that the time is right for me to kind of call that forward. And she said, okay, so let's see what happens. And I went and met with her, and she had me do some specific exercises, we'll put it that way. They're nothing that I could share with anybody else, but she had me basically get into a space where I could allow my memory and my knowing to come forward. And it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. Before it actually happened, she she worked with me to get me to a place where I could hear the masters. And this was a complaint of mine for a long time, that I couldn't hear the masters. And I'll just stop for a brief second and say that I shared this story with those of you out there because I know what it's like to sit in your position. And as I was saying to Pielian earlier, you know, if I could sit at the feet of Atona and listen to her for days on end, I would have done it. I still would, because there's something that is so amazing about hearing other people's experiences. And so I share them with you, not because I personally care to really share my experience, but because I do understand the value of it. And I think that through my own experience, it will help to validate your experiences as well. And I know that that has been a very strong thing in my walk, getting confirmation through hearing things from other people that I had already experienced, but I couldn't place a label to it. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I had experienced something. And then I would hear someone else speak of it, and I'd be like, oh my goodness, like I had that, you know. So that being said, we were in this room together, and she called in Archangel Michael, and Michael came in and he was conversing with both of us. But of course, you know, I couldn't quote unquote hear him. So she would say, okay, I want you to, you know, do whatever and pay attention. And she's having me do these different things, you know. And then at one point, like nothing is working, nothing is working. And then she looked at me and she said, he's telling me to tell you to drop your expectation. And I looked at her, I'm like, what do you mean? She says, drop any expectation you have of what you think hearing him should be, you know. And as soon as I did that, I heard him loud and clear. I mean, loud and clear, right? But the funny thing was, I had, you know, expectation was sitting there saying I should experience him as this separate voice that I'm hearing, right? Coming maybe from the corner of the room. I don't know where. But as soon as I dropped it, I heard him. And then I just laughed, because what I experienced in that moment was that I had been hearing him for the last, you know, 6-8 months. I don't know what it was. It had been a long time that I had been conversing with him, and I hadn't even recognized it because it was such a natural thing that was going on. And of course, my expectation said it should be something else, so I doubted my own experience. And that is such a normal thing that people go through when they're on their spiritual path. Is mind loves to create any little seed of doubt, and if it can do that, it's like it's gotcha, and it will always try to put that into your experience so that when you have something happen, it places doubt, so you'll question yourself. So I went through that, and it was beautiful. And at that point, then I was ready. So I went in, and she started just asking me some very specific questions. And they weren't leading questions, but they were questions that were just to come into consciousness, you know. And as she asked, she said, you know, you just need to allow what's going to come, right? Don't doubt it. Don't judge it. Just allow it to be what it is. And she said, where are you from? And, you know, for like all this time, I had been convinced that I was from Antares. You know, it's a huge sun, right? Antares. And I'm like, there's, you know, whatever it is, I feel very drawn to it. And I've always felt very drawn to felines. I know that I was in feline form, not as a cat, but as a humanoid feline at some point in time. Lyra, I was always very connected with. And so there were all these different things running, right? So what I actually kind of heard, it's not really a hearing so much as a intuitive knowing, didn't make sense to me. And I think my face must have gotten all scrunchy because you know, I have my eyes closed. And she's like, what do you see? And I tentatively said, Venus. And she says, oh, she says, very good. You're from Venus. And I kind of couldn't, I couldn't reconcile that right away because it just didn't seem possible, right? Not that I doubted that there was, you know, certainly a multitude of life forms on Venus. I just, you know, didn't think it was me. So she said, okay, very good. And then she would kind of repeat that information to allow that information to really start to sink in and lock into place. And she asked me, you know, okay, what is your name? And it was the most amazing thing because I couldn't pull in the name. But what I could see was that there was a connection to a story that I did know about Venus, and that was the story of Sanat Kamata and the Kamatas and the work that they have done and are doing on this planet. And I saw this woman, and you know, these experiences are so real. They transcend any concept that you have of real, because this is what we experience is real. But when you have these experiences, they are so, it's like they're crystallized into this, you know, space that you just never lose. And when her face came in, I just will never forget what she looked like. She was the most beautiful, like the quintessential picture of grace that I could even remotely try to form was this woman. And I knew her to be my mother. And she looked at me and she said, Shasada. And I said, Shasada. And then Atona is saying, okay, Shasada. And she was repeating it for me kind of over. And she said, is there more? And I heard the next word. And again, I must have gotten scrunchy face because she said, don't doubt it. What are you hearing? I said, it can't be right. And she said, no. What are you hearing? And I said, Akona. And she said, very good. And I said, but it's too close to Atona. Like, yeah, right. In my reality, it was like, oh, I'm making that up, right? Because Atona, Akona, too close, right? And she says, no. She said, if you understood how I forget how she worded it, but basically how names are formed kind of in that space, it would make sense to you kind of thing. And then I knew that the last part was Kamata. And it is normal in the my experience anyway of the illumined worlds is you will have a name that is two sections, and the first or the second, I guess they can be interchangeable. One is feminine, one is masculine. So in my name, Shasada is the feminine aspect, and Akona is the masculine. And the Kamata isn't a last name. A lot of people see that and they think it's my last name, and they do the same with Atona Reyes. They think Reyes is her last name. Kamata is actually a title, so that's a separate thing. But when you address someone who has their full spiritual name, when you only address a portion of it, you're actually only addressing that aspect. So when I refer to Atona Reyes as Atona, I'm really only addressing the feminine and not the masculine aspect of her, which is kind of an interesting little side note. So all of that came, and then she asked me a question. And the question was, she said, Shasada Kona Kamata, except she didn't say it that eloquently. I will tell you, Atona is very challenged with my name. I love this woman. You have no idea how much I love this woman. And I love to hear her say Shashara. So she said my name to me. And then she said, did you come with Sanat Kamata, you know, here? And as soon as she said that, there was this, I can't put words to it. I'm sorry, but I want to say it was like a lifting, but something locking in and going deep at the same time. It was like this solidification that just kind of hit. And kind of like, you know, you see those movies and there's like some quantum explosion and it's like, boom, right? Yeah. And that's what I experienced kind of inside my being. And as soon as she said it, there was no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what happened. And I just broke into tears. And I sat there and cried for a little bit. And when that happened, I actually was able to see that. I saw myself standing on this, I'm sorry, I don't know quite know what to call it, like a alabaster, I want to say like a platform, like a patio, like a very large, large space. And I knew it to be Shambhala, and that's where I was. And I was standing on this area and looking over, and I was looking over this. It was almost like we were up kind of on a mountain, or we were in a hill. Like, it's all built on this hill. There's this big river that runs down through, and I could see all the buildings, and it was nighttime. And the buildings were just incredible because they're all like alabaster, and they're all lit from within. And they glow, and the buildings are conscious, you know, and they're alive. So it's like you're watching their beingness, and it's displayed for everybody. And so there are these beautiful, subtle shifts of these amazing colors. But I saw what happened, and I actually saw myself in the moment where I had made that decision that I was coming. And there was, you know, no doubt for me. So I came out. And, you know, we talked for a bit and kind of left it. And, you know, for as powerful as it was, what happens is after a couple of days, you know, it becomes this surreal kind of event. And then, of course, you want to start doubting yourself. And it's hard to hold that really kind of locked in because the world is so strong. The energies are so dense and so strong here. That to hold that very refined energy is very difficult. And so what I did, though, was I found that things were, as I looked at it, things were starting to make sense. And there were certain things that, for me, worked as that level of confirmation that I really needed that definitely helped me lock it in. The thing that I struggled with the most, it wasn't my name. That felt very natural. But the thing that I really, for probably a good 3 years, had a very hard time accepting was that I was actually the daughter of Sanat Kamata and Lady Venus. And that is the truth. I just had a really hard time accepting that. I don't know why, but I just did. So the cool thing, though, was that since I was probably 8 years old, I knew that if I ever had a daughter, her name would be Sarah. And I didn't know why. I just loved that name. There was something incredibly special about that name to me. And the funny thing was, when I actually looked up Shasada, of course, nothing comes up for that because I can't find that on Google anywhere, right? Like, there's no Shasada. But in Chinese, the word Shu, S-H-U, which is the first part, means Sarah, just cracked me up. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my goodness. And another thing that I had seen in my, and I wasn't searching for it, and this is the beauty. It's, you know, these beautiful synchronistic events that come together, you know, to really lock everything in for you. I was happening to look at, I used to see these all the time. I used to see these images in meditation, but mostly in that time between right before you wake up, where you're not fully conscious, but you're not in that deep sleep anymore. And I would see all of these images, but I'd see hieroglyphics for a while. And I've always known I had at least one, if not multiple lives in Egypt. So that was no surprise. But I would, if I could catch it long enough before I came to, I would like write out what the hieroglyph looked like. And one day I happened to be on the internet and I saw a picture of this particular hieroglyph. And it was exactly one I had seen that I had written down. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at that. That's amazing. And I looked at the name of the hieroglyph and it's named Shu. Isn't it something? So that had been there. Shambhala had always been there for me. I knew that, you know, Beck, I had told the story about wanting to have this spiritual retreat. I knew it would be the Shambhala Center. And I didn't know why, because in my upbringing as a Methodist, I didn't have, you know, any knowledge of Shambhala at all. And then the biggest thing that was the real kicker for me was that there was a book that I had purchased. It's a very, very special book. I don't know if I should give out the name of the book or not. Anyway.
Atona may say.
Yes, Tona may not want me to. So I won't. But this particular book gives the story of Sanat Kamata coming to hold the light for humanity and the story of the 144,000 that came from Venus and all of that. Well, when I had read that, and that would have been back early on in 2008, so probably a good 8 months before I had my experience, I read that story. And remember, I told you last week, all of this was brand new for me. I had no idea who these people were. I didn't know any of this, nothing. And when I read that story, I cried uncontrollably for probably 10 minutes. I mean, sobbed, you know, that kind of, you know, retching, just you can't catch your breath kind of sobbing. And I had no idea why it impacted me so much. I mean, it was a big deal. And I brought it to my husband. I was like, oh my gosh, you have to hear this. You know, it just blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. And so I read it to him and he kind of looked at me. He's like, yeah, so seriously. And I was like stunned because I'm like, oh my gosh, how can you not be impacted by that? Right. And, you know, just the thought of the love and the level of service that Sanat Kamata presented, it hit me at my core. And then, of course, when my name came in and everything, I understood, oh my goodness, that's why, you know, that's why it was so impactful, because I was there, you know, because that is my story as well. And that was very special, very special. So it's been an unfolding. It's kind of like when these things happen for everyone, you know, you don't want to kind of get some information and then run out searching for more information, because that's the personal self just looking for satisfaction, you know. And the important thing is to kind of just sit back and let things unfold as they will. And that's what I did. So it's been, you know, an ongoing process of discovering what my mission here is. I knew that the retreat would be a large part of it. At the time, I had no idea that I was going to be functioning as a guide in the same capacity that Atona does. And now, even in the last 6 months, my understanding of my role here has deepened quite a bit. And I do have an understanding that through more synchronicity, which is another beautiful story, but I do have the understanding that I am, you know, one of the people here on the planet who is here to anchor in the Kamata wisdom. You know, it is ancient wisdom and it has been protected on this planet for millions of years. And the time is truly now for it to come forward to people. And it's, you know, it's not that it's new information. It's more that it's information that has been kind of dispersed in kind of bits and pieces and different things, but it hasn't all been brought together in one chunk. And that's the piece that through my work with Atona and now doing my own work, that, you know, I'm really seeing that it is all these very deep esoteric understandings. It's the understanding of the mind. It's the understanding of quantum physics. It's like, it's all of it that just kind of comes together, and it's amazing. So, so that's my lineage. I am one of the Kamatas. You'd be familiar, for those of you, if you're not familiar with the Kamata lineage, they are referred to as like the Lords of the Flame, and they are from Venus, a higher dimensional aspect of Venus. And one of them you would be extremely familiar with, I'm sure, is Sananda Kamata, who in the aspect that walked the planet was known as Yeshua ben Joseph, or you would know him as Jesus. So he's like a brother to me, which is how I experience him, you know, when I am in his presence. So I think, does that pretty much cover it, you think, for people?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Now going into experience, you know, you're saying that having these experiences helps to make everything more real, help to lock it in. And one thing that you've always taught us is that your life is your spiritual path. And that experiencing things really is what does it. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's one of the quotes that, you know, I have. I was a very, very good student. One of the balances I carried and still struggle with to this day. No, but I was like, I was the best student ever. And so I wrote down everything Atona said to me. I do have certain quotes of hers that, go ahead.
Which will tell everybody that they probably should keep a notebook and pen.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Yes. And I never even thought to put that in the write-up. At our satsang sessions at home, even though you can just kind of, maybe you could sit and close your eyes and kind of be in a meditative state. Actually, there's a lot of teaching that goes on during our sessions as well. And so I really do encourage people to bring, you know, either a tape recorder or a notepad so that they can jot things down. Because there are certain things that I'll say and I will tell them, write that down. That's what was done with me. And there was a reason, because I would go back and look at that quote over and over, and over the course of years, it takes on completely different meanings. You know, it's beautiful stuff. So yeah, please feel free prior to the show to grab a pen and piece of paper, or do the archives, you know, later if you want to re-listen. So, but yeah, one of the things that she had always said that was so profound. I mean, it's such a simple statement, but you know, it's always the simple things that are the most profound anyway. And what she always would say to me was that there, first off, there is nothing that is not spiritual. So let's sit with that just for a second, okay? Because, you know, and you're going to have to all bear with me. I'm probably going to, you know, tick you guys off at some point. I promise I will. If I'm worth my salt, I will. So part of this work is it challenges every belief you've ever held. Well, on BBS, you know, I'm talking to a group of people, you know, many of which are really on their spiritual paths, but many of which are kind of caught in the new age story, right? Where everything has to be love and light, and we don't want anything to do with anything other than that. And it's highly polarized, and it's a trap, honestly. And so when she said that to me, it was an amazing thing to witness. I'm like, well, wow. Like, what do you mean there's nothing that's not spiritual? You know, it's like, but this is my spiritual work, you know, and by calling it my spiritual work, I'm holding it separate from everything else, right? And what I saw in short order, because of the amount of work I was doing, was that just couldn't be true anymore. And then what I really saw was that there was only one. And if there's only one, how could anything not be spiritual? Because everything is spirit. So allow that to kind of sink in, you know, as you live your daily life. You know, a lot of you think you go to work, right? Or you raise your kids, or you're going out clubbing, right? Doing whatever. But on Sunday, you're spiritual when you go to church, or on Tuesday night, you go to your, you know, meditation group and you're spiritual then, or you're spiritual when you're reading your Doreen Virtue book, you know, it's all spiritual. And that's the beauty. You know, your life itself is your spiritual path. It's your life. And what I came to understand, even though she never spoke it to me, was that your life is one ongoing initiation. So look at that. You know, we think we have this concept of you go through initiations, right? As if, you know, you have to go to some weekend retreat someplace and get initiated, sign up for a level of initiation. And it's not that doesn't happen. Okay. I speak in a lot of paradox. I'm not negating that, even though I'm saying this, and they do seem to be in opposition to each other, but they really aren't. Every moment of your life is part of that initiation, and you are constantly moving through initiations. But it is where you're functioning from in every moment that determines where you are in those initiations and whether you're moving forward or whether you're standing still or whether you're slipping backwards. And it does happen. So, you know, that is a profound teaching, although it seems very simple. But if you have a pencil, write it down. There is nothing that is not spiritual, and your life is, capital I, capital S, your spiritual path. Really profound. And you'll understand that more and more as you walk the path. So what else? What am I supposed to go into next that I have forgotten already?
Oh, wait, am I off mute? Okay. Okay, so last week, I do know because some people actually said something to me about something that you said during the broadcast. Okay. And it was, we were talking about what love is, right?
Yes.
And it was, the one thing that you said was that you realized that you didn't really truly love your kids.
Yes.
And so we have a saying, it's human love is predicated on behavior.
Yes.
And that one's huge. So if you can go into that, because I think that would help explain things as far as last week.
Absolutely. 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 Yeah, I think I really confused some people last week when I said that. And please understand, I've always loved my children. However, I was functioning from the state of human love. And it does refer to this quote, human love is predicated on behavior. What that means is actually it's incredibly simple. So you can look to your life right now and say, you know, have I fallen prey to this concept here? Which is that I will love you as long as you kind of fit into what my version of love is. But as soon as you step out of that version, you know, am I capable of loving you anymore? And most people, if you're honest with yourself and if you're going to walk this path, you have to be brutally honest with yourself. It's the hardest work you'll ever do. I promise you that. It is the hardest work you'll ever do, but it has the biggest payoffs too. So if you're brutally honest, can you say that you're capable in a moment of someone betraying you or someone lashing out at you? Are you capable of holding the space of love for them? You know, and if we're honest with ourselves, we would recognize that in this human walk, no, people are not capable of that. It's very conditional. You know, we hold unconditional love to a very high regard, and as we should. But how many people are walking it? You know, not many. You're shaking your head. Not many. And that is such, you know, if that was the only thing I ever got from my work, you couldn't put a price on that. You know, moving from functioning the way everybody functions to then into a space where other people may still experience me the same way, of course, because I'm their projection. But at the same time, I am experiencing everyone with a depth of love that up until that point, I did not know existed. And then when you look back at the person that you used to be, that person just doesn't exist anymore. You know, they just don't exist. And it's just the most amazing thing. Let me throw in a little a story. Here's one that was given to me by my Guruji, because this is perfect for this case. So there is this silent monk who, you know, took a vow of silence and hasn't spoken like ever, right? And the silent monk lives in this humble little abode, has very meager belongings. And the silent monk leaves his home and he goes into town maybe to get some bread or something for his dinner and returns. And when he returns to his home, there's somebody inside. And it is a vandal who has come to take what little he has. And the vandal turns around and sees the monk and he has this long knife in his hand. The vandal comes at him with the knife. And just as he is about to plunge the knife into the chest, the monk speaks the only words he has ever spoken and will ever speak. And what he says is this: thou too art God. And so a lot of people would hear that and go, well, what on earth does that mean? And it's pointing to exactly what I'm saying here, that in the moment when even his own life is about to be stripped away from him, the only thing he's capable of witnessing is the divinity, the innocence, the beauty that rests in the other individual. And what he sees is that other individual is functioning from the patterning that he took on mostly as a small child, but that was reinforced as he grew. And it doesn't matter to the monk what it looks like on the outside or who he seems to be. What the monk sees is God, period. That's what this work brings you to, is the capacity to stand in that space. It's truly incredible. It's just incredible.
Now, you had mentioned that people will continue to see you as they always have, because that's their projection. Sure. Can you elaborate on that? Like, just because you're saying that when you do this work, you'll be able to see people, their true essence. So yes. Can you elaborate what it is that people are seeing that is their projection? Do you understand that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, here comes another one. You got a piece of paper. Now's a chance to use it. This was another beautiful, a beautiful thing for me. It's a pivotal moment. I love that all these are coming so quickly. I had a pivotal moment. I'll tell you another personal story. So at the time I was going to a particular group for meetings, and there was this one person there that used to just kind of get under my skin. There's kind of no better way to put it. I was very judgmental, just as everybody is. And this person seemed to have, you know, the best of intentions. He's got a good heart, that kind of a thing. But I couldn't understand why he just used to kind of grate on my nerves, right? And so Atona was at my house and we were having lunch or something, and my husband was there. And I said, "Well, I have a question for you." She's like, "Yeah." I said, "You know, how come some people just annoy you? Like, what is it? What is it with that? Are they just, they don't resonate with you, you know?" And she said, "Well, tell me what it is about this person that doesn't resonate with you." And so I sat and thought about it for a minute. You know, I wasn't too quick to just jump in. I really wanted to give her an accurate answer. And I said, "You know," I said, "what I think it comes down to is that there's something about this person that feels inauthentic." And she goes, "Huh." And I look at my husband and I'm like, "Would you agree with that?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'd agree with that." I'm like, "Okay. So I know I'm right." Right? I know I'm right.
Validation.
That's right. And she looks at me and she says, it just very plainly, okay, this is the beauty of Atona. I'm very verbose compared to Atona. She'll just give you a one-liner and just leave you with it. And what she said to me was, "Anything you can't own is yourself, you project into the outside world." And I went, "What?" "Excuse me?" And she's kind of smirking at me at this point. She says, "Anything that you can't own as yourself, you project into the outside world." And that made, you know, there are these moments we call thresholds where you will feel like you're going to throw up, or you will feel like your head is spinning, or you will feel like every bone in your body aches, or like all these experiences that you have. And it's literally when the lower mind comes into a space where it's up against truth, it literally has nowhere to go. And it's like it hits a wall and it just stops. And in that moment, it's like, and literally what happens is it brings attention. It tries to bring attention to the physical form, because if it can get you to re-identify with the physical form in that moment, then you kind of fall back into, you know, your identification. And that's what that did to me. I was like, "Oh my God, like, what is she saying? What is she saying? I mean, look at that, you know? Anything I can't own is me, I project out into my outside world. So this guy is my projection." like, you know, and my whole world just, you know, "Oh, I just took the red pill apparently, because my whole world just went boom," you know. And that's exactly what's going on. You know, the if we look at it in terms of you are living on a planet that is existing in polarization, And we have to understand that everything here is being held in balance. It's all about balance, right? And that's the purpose of karma and reincarnation, all this, because it holds everything in balance. So if we look at it and say, well, I'm conscious that I am not that, right? So what am I? I said he was inauthentic. So I identify myself with being an authentic person, right? Probably even pride myself on being an authentic person, right? If I hold that in place, that means that any concept I may have, or any identification I may have with being inauthentic is not something I am willing to look at. And because I'm not, it gets shoved back into the unconscious. Well, on this planet, everything has to be represented. Everything, okay? So any place where identification has been held, the opposite has to be represented. Well, I'm already holding one piece, aren't I? I'm holding the piece that says I'm an authentic person. And since I can't hold the other, and I'm not willing to look at it, and I'm not willing to see where I actually am inauthentic, I will see it in other people. And it's because I see it in another person, I project it out on that person. He could be the most authentic person in the world, but I won't see it because I have to make him wrong and I have to make me right to hold my story in place. It's really that simple. And in doing so, what it does is it maintains the sense of separation that we're all experiencing here. If I can hold that he's something I'm not, that makes him separate from me, doesn't it? And it can't not be that way. And so everybody's walking around the planet doing exactly this, right? I'm going to hold on to that I'm this, and then I'm going to literally look for all the examples of what I'm not out in the world, and I'm going to allow those things to really bug me, and I'm going to judge them, right? I'm going to be very self-righteous about them. And then all of that will enable me to hold my story and to, you know, create it to be an even bigger, you know, version of the same story. A story can start real little and it gets really, really big after a short time because this is what we're always doing. You know, every time we judge, we're making that story a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And we're making and if you take it to the level of the brain, we're actually making the neural net that's formed around these concepts that are all intertwined into this matrix. We're making those connections stronger, right? And just like a heroin addict who starts off, you know, shooting up with one dose and, you know, it's fantastic. Talk to the same heroin addict a year later and it's taking a whole lot more to get them the same thing. Well, there's nothing different going on in your brain because that's exactly what's happening. Okay, there is a biochemical thing that's going on in your brain and you all are addicted to the chemicals that are running that get docked into your body every time you swing out and into this place. You're going to feel victimized and you will find a reason to swing out and you do it through judgment. You'll judge, and as soon as you judge or you take some kind of an action, it allows those chemicals to dock in and you'll get an actual endorphin release and you'll feel better. So, you know, it's amazing that there's all of this stuff that's going on simultaneously, and it's actually very scientific, but it's more than just scientific, you know, and what it does, it creates how you are perceiving reality, which brings us to another amazing teaching, which is that, you know, no one here is actually experiencing reality, right? What is it that people are experiencing? What they're experiencing is the superimposition of their own version of reality over the top of what actually is, right? And that all comes from exactly what we were talking about just a minute ago about projection, you know, and to go to another amazing story, which is the perfect example for superimposition. We'll tell the story of the snake and the adept. And in the snake and the adept, many of you are probably familiar with this one, but I'll tell it, you know, in a shortened version. But let's say that there's an adept in India and he's walking along, you know, by himself out in the wilderness, and he comes across a king cobra. This adept sees the snake and just is terrified. So he stands there not knowing what to do. So terrified that he literally has a heart attack and dies. And the interesting thing to the story is that it wasn't a snake at all. It was a stick. That there was a stick lying in the grass that the adept projected was a snake because of his fear of snakes. And so in the moment, the mind literally creates that image for him, and he experiences it as if it's real, when truly it isn't. The reality that underlies the whole thing was there's a stick lying in the grass. And this is exactly what the mind does. And I'm going to expand on that with my own version, right? Because again, I love to tell my own stories, because that's how I learn and that's how everybody else learns too. So I had this. This is beautiful, because again, remember, everything lies in the synchronicity. The spirit just works in synchronicity. So I had heard this story from Atona, and within, oh gosh, it may have been 2 days. It was less than a week, right? I used to bring my dogs out every night. Actually, at that point, I think I just had one. And we used to walk down the street and back. I live on a cul-de-sac. We'd just walk down to the end and come back, you know, right before bed. So it was dark out and everything. So I went out with her one night, and she did her thing. And we have a cat, and our cat would always come with us. This is a very fun thing. So my cat would come with us. And this one night, we went out in the street, and I think I was bringing the dog back in, and I saw my cat in the street, and she's kind of creeping up on this thing. And it's dark out, and the only light we have, we don't have street lights, but there's someone who has like a post lamp in their front yard, and so there's like a little bit of light shining through, and I see her. You know how cats are, when they start coming up on something, they're going to attack. You know, she's moving real slow and all that, and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, what is she doing? So I start walking over to her to see what she's doing, and as I do, I see it. There is a snake in the road. And I do live in North Carolina, and we do have copperheads here. So, you know, my first thought is, oh, dear God, get away from the snake. You know, I don't want my cat to get struck by the snake. So I'm yelling at her, Sophie, you know, get away. And she's like coming up closer, kind of sniffing at it. I'm like, Sophie. And I'm coming up closer, and she walks over the top of it and keeps walking. And I was like, you know, panicked. And so after she walks by, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, oh, must be dead, you know, because I could see it. It's like, you know, like a snake would be. It's kind of not curled up, but it's just whatever. And I'm walking up, and I'm looking, and I can't quite see it. And I get way down to look at it, and it's a bungee cord. It's an old bungee cord laying in the street. And I was convinced it was a snake. There's no question. And this comes right after I had that story happen with Atona, that, you know, she shared that with me, just to show you how now I just had my experience of the same thing. And don't think that didn't lock it in for me, that there are times where you actually are convinced that what you're seeing is real. And it absolutely is not, you know, it absolutely is not. And that is how, believe it or not, most of you are functioning on a daily basis. You're not seeing the reality that underlies your projections.
Do you happen to have any stories where it kind of, maybe it's a situation that happened with another person, where it's, you know, the superimposition? Do you know what I mean? Like, just so people can relate to it, to see how it can happen in other situations in their lives. It may not be like something with snake on the ground, where it's a situation where you have another person, and really, you totally made up this whole story in your head mm-hmm. about what happened, and that's really not
oh,
what
sure.
really occurred.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell one of mine. So this was, again, fairly early on in my work, and this is a beautiful story, actually. I love this one. I had done some very, very deep processing work concerning my husband. And I had told you last week, I mean, we were in a tough way when we moved back here to North Carolina, and it was just very stressful. And my husband and I have an extremely strong bond. And so, you know, it took that to keep us together, because life was rough. Anyway, he would come home every day from work, and he'd give me a hug, you know, whatever would happen. But I got used to his kind of indifferent hugs. And I will never forget. And now here's the cool thing. Prior to me doing this work, Atona had said to me, when you see through something, when you do your work, right, and you see what's at play and you dissolve it, you will see your outside world change. I could not wrap myself around that. I was like, okay, like whatever that means, I don't know, but I'll trust you on that. So I had done some very deep work concerning my husband, and I will never forget it. I came down that day. I had done that work while he was at work. He came home, and I came downstairs, met him in the family room, and went to give him a hug. And he gave me the most beautiful, loving, caring, tender hug that I had experienced in a very long time. I mean, it really floored me. I was amazed. And later we were sitting, I think Atona was actually staying with us at that time. We were sitting at dinner and something came up and I said, yeah, I said, you know, you gave me the most beautiful hug today. It was amazing. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I didn't hug you any different today than I ever do. You know, and his reality was that that's how he hugs me. And I couldn't see it. I couldn't experience him, right? Because in his hug, I was getting the indifference that I was the one holding on to. It wasn't him. It was always me. And that's a perfect example of how we do that. But once that was gone, once I had seen what I needed to see, that lifted. And then at that point, I could experience him from my heart. And then I could experience what he was giving back to me, which was very beautiful and very loving, you know. And then you see, like, kind of, you know, pardon my language, but what a schmuck you've been this whole time for, like, holding things against people when they haven't done you wrong. You know, you've been the one who's convinced yourself of these things that really most of the time aren't even true. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, we have a little bit of time, so I would definitely like to, first we wanted to plug the site. Ask you to go visit our site. Do you want to do that?
I can plug the site. We just revamped it in the past week. So if you went last week, you have a whole new site to go to this week. It's at theshambhalacenter.org. Shambhala. And it will continue to grow. But for now, it's gorgeous. I don't think you've seen a site like it in the spiritual community. I just think it's beautiful. But we're using some of the teachings that I shared tonight on that front page when you open it up, which is really lovely. So yes, please, we would love to have you come by there and also visit us on Facebook, facebook.com, the Shambhala Center. We're very active there. I'm constantly putting information on that site every day, anything that supports our work. Sometimes it's my own teaching. Sometimes it's teachings from other masters. And you know, it can be anything as long as it's in support of the work that we do.
Okay. And then we're also going to ask for donations.
Yeah, we could do that too. Shambhala Center is a nonprofit organization. And we, you know, I do the work I do. This is all I do. And I'm only able to do it as people are giving. And so if you feel appreciation for our work, we would love to accept your donation with much gratitude. You can find a PayPal link actually on our Shambhala Center BBS page.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I will say, I was actually just having a conversation with my sister last night. We're talking about the energies going on and how everything is so crazy. And I was telling her, thank God that we've done the work that we've done with Shusara, because I think I'd probably be going crazy right now. So it's very valuable. And yes. Yeah, we definitely like to keep that going and get it out to everyone.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The time has come. There is no question. It is now time to get this work out to the masses. It's always been kind of done one-on-one, and it's going to be a learning process for all of us, because as you all start going and doing your own work, things will come up for you that traditionally you would have someone kind of right there to work with you on and to guide you through. So, you know, we're all going to figure this out together, but we will figure it out, and it will be amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. You think, are we about ready to go? I know we started a little late, so I'm not sure how long we're running. You good, Pialian?
We're good. Yep. We're good.
Okay. Excellent. Maybe I'll say one more thing. We run we have a sister organization called Create a New World, and we run every month something called the Add Your Energy Charity Raffle. And what we do is we collect donations from people, and they can nominate a nonprofit. And at the end of that month, we do a drawing, and whatever nonprofit wins, all of the money that we collected for that month actually goes to that nonprofit. It's a very fun thing that we do each month. This month, we're doing it a little different because of the typhoon in the Philippines, and we are collecting donations for that reason alone. So if you are interested in donating, 100% of your donation is going to the Philippines to help the victims over there. And we would love to have your donations for that as well. Are we set up? I think on our Facebook page, we have a link there where you can go, and it's a specific kind of donate button on PayPal, and it goes specifically to that fund. So we will be collecting those through the end of November. So maybe each week we'll just mention that. But anything. I mean, we usually ask for $5, you know, the price of a cup of coffee, you know, $5 a month, but it can make a big impact. And certainly as we come together collectively and add our energy to do something like this, then the effect of it is exponentially increased. And that's the beauty of it. That's why we want to continue doing these things. We want to get as much kind of positive, beautiful energy behind everything that we do as we can. So I guess that's it for tonight. We will wrap it up. We will see you next Thursday again at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Your comments are always greatly appreciated. Much love to you, and we will see you next week. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.